Welcome, and today, this gorgeous day, I'm actually walking again as part two with Jim Derrick at Noon Hill in Medfield. And as I said in earlier podcasts with the first session with Jim, this second session is a tribute to his son, Jack, who passed in July of this year, 2022. And just join us for the most engaging, authentic, and real soulful conversation. So what's crazy about our encounter is that, you know, we met here November 30th of 2021. And you were really the first person for the new season that has already launched. But here we are at Noon Hill. Gorgeous day, September 30th. Mm-hmm. And a lot has shifted since our last walk, which we will share with all of you listeners. So this is part two. And so share, you know.
Yeah, well, it's been... As we just talked about in the parking lot, I don't think there are any coincidences in life. And I think somehow we were meant to meet.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we met last November, I was coming up on the 14th year of a struggle with my son's illness. My son, Jack, struggled with substance use disorder and some mental health concerns for the better part of 15 years. And on July 15th of this year, I was down in Florida visiting my parents, and got a phone call that Jack had passed from an accidental fentanyl overdose in Medway. And so that became a new chapter of a very difficult portion of life.
Right. And it, you know, it's... It's grief, right? You're moving through grief and how to handle that,
right?
And be in grief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Kip, you put that right, moving forward with it.
Yes.
And I think culturally I've been trained to get over things, to move past things, to... You know, are they over that yet? You know,
yes.
And over is not a concept that, as you know, we do with this type of grief. You move forward with it. You learn how to create space for it. You hold it. And in doing that, we hold our sons.
Yes, yes.
You know, we hold them close to us.
Yes.
And you know, I still have a very active relationship with Jack.
Good, good.
Know? So,
So what, talk about that? What?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I got very fortunate, although it wasn't luck. Again, I don't think it's a coincidence, but I met some great people on my journey with Jack through his challenges. And it was all centered around my codependency. And I got, as we talked about in the first episode, I got really sick.
Yes.
Spiritually and physically.
Well, because you were putting him at the center, right? You wanted to fix, or is that not accurate?
No, that's absolutely right.
Okay.
So my drug of choice.
Yes.
Okay, and I'll ask people to be patient with that metaphor for a moment. But my drug of choice became my son.
Oh,
so his obsession of the mind drove him to drink and drug for self-medication. My obsession of the mind... for self-medication was to race to my son's aid every time he needed me, and even when he didn't, to get that sort of rush feeling that I was somehow going to be able to heal him.
Right.
And it becomes, codependency can be a very dangerous thing. And it certainly took a toll on me. So along that journey, I met some folks that wanted to help with their lived experience, introduced me to some principles from the Big Book, the 12 steps, that allowed me to learn how to heal from codependency. And a couple of those people had lost children to this illness.
Right.
And they became really soulmates for me in this journey. So now that this has happened to me, one of the lessons that I learned from them was that, number one, you can hold two thoughts at once. You can hold two emotions at once. So, for instance, people ask me how I am today.
Yes.
And I tell them I have a very healthy mixture of grief.
Yes.
And gratitude.
Yes, yes.
And I'm not just saying that.
Right, right. I get it. I get it. And so, well, and then what happens, right, is that you get to choose. See, I think that I think grieving is a lifelong experience, right?
I
mean, it just is.
I do.
And yet, when we're in this life experience and we're the ones living, you get to choose gratitude even through the grief. but it's a higher emotion that will transform your relationship even with your son.
That is correct.
Right?
Yes.
So talk about that experience
for
you.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. Well, back to some principles, because this is instructive to what you just said for me in my experience. One of the core principles of recovery, particularly through the 12 steps, but in general, and a good human principle, is that resentment, anger, being burnt up at people, places, things, blocks us from connecting with our spiritual selves and ultimately, in my case, my higher power.
Yes.
And blocks me from being able to have the experience that you just outlined.
Yes.
So how did that practically play itself out in my life? Well, as I mentioned before, along the way, I was watching people deal with their grief before Jack died in this 12-step program in a way that was void of anger. That when their loved ones died, they weren't looking to blame somebody. They weren't angry with their sons. They weren't angry with the drug dealers. They weren't angry with... They were sad.
Yes.
But they weren't victims.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And it's an important distinction. And what that allowed them to do was live into their grief, number one, and truly live their grief and not mask it with anger and, you know, all of the things that come along with resentment. And importantly, it also allowed them to experience joy and experience the joy of the memory of their kids. Or as my dear friend Katie always says to me, hey, if you provoke tears in me about my son Matthew, just know that that's a good day for me.
Oh, it is,
you know,
right?
The cost of love is grief.
Right.
I'll pay that price all day long.
Right.
Because I loved him.
Right. You want
love him. Yeah.
Well, and you want to keep them in your life through the memories and the stories and the recollecting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how have you been able to grieve? Like, what has served you?
Well,
one is the soulmates that you've created, which is amazing, through 12-step.
Yeah. You know, so I've kept, maybe some of this is familiar, the wake and the funeral, they were important for obvious reasons, but, you know, it was like being a host at a dinner party. I wasn't even there.
Right.
Mentally, I still was in shock.
Right.
I say I, my whole family. But that said, we had over 600 people come through the line.
Mm.
And, you know, what I've learned, Kip, is that it does matter. Showing up does matter.
Yes.
That it carried us.
Yes.
The line, the cards we could measure in the pounds, the flowers, the baked goods, the hugs, all of those things do matter. So the way we grieved at the beginning, literally, where people were carrying us. And I think now, and I know this is predictable, and I know I've heard this before, but now that people have gone away, it's become a lot more difficult.
Yes, yes.
And I won't sugarcoat it. It's hard for me to, some days, it's hard for me to get out of bed.
Yeah.
it's hard for me to focus. My memory is shot.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So the grieving process, and one of the principles that, thank gosh, has been given to me by other people is, however you feel, Jim, is okay.
It's so true.
Do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do anything more.
Yeah, and don't beat yourself up and don't judge yourself.
Right.
Right? Well, and in our other, it's so interesting, right? Because in our other episode, if I recall, there were a couple things you said in terms of principles is, you know, being comfortable in the discomfort. Hello.
Yeah.
Grief is the worst.
Here we are, right?
Yeah. Like,
are.
Oh my gosh. It can't get any worse than this.
Right.
And then the second thing you said is, you know, being of service to everybody, but you must be of service to yourself.
Boy.
And this is pronounced right now for you.
It is. And, you know, that's a good one, Kip, because that is one that I am wrestling with. I'm really wrestling with my relationship with myself. And I think that's what grief has, part of the grieving process is really reconciling in those moments when you're feeling completely alone and when you feel less than adequate because it's another day in your gym shorts at noon.
Yes.
You know, and you're saying, I'm supposed to be in the office, I'm supposed to be productive.
Oh.
You know.
Oh.
You really have to go deep inside and find your own support.
Yes.
Create your own support.
Yes.
And draw on the tools.
Yes.
And I've been able, thank God, I've been able to do that. And I'm not alone most of the time because usually I'm dodging phone calls because there's so many kind people that are calling to check in.
Right.
But you're right. The relationship with self is so important in
right.
this process. So important to reconcile that.
And when you do give yourself the space to be in the emotion, right? Mm-hmm. When you wake up, what do you experience?
Well, you know, Kip, I have, I'm going to call it two levels.
Uh-huh.
I have the elevator level, which is between my forehead and my sternum.
Yeah.
And that is the knowledge that Jack is gone.
Right.
The understanding that he's moved to another plane, that I won't see him again here physically on this planet. Okay, that's something I can understand, I can talk about with very little emotion right now. It's almost robotic to me.
Right.
The second level, and the one that I'm really struggling to access,
yeah,
is the deep, I'm call it sitting down or the deep down in my heart knowledge that everything I just said is true.
Right.
And that, I haven't been able to go there. I keep bouncing off of it. Every time I hit that, it's like hitting exposed root in my mouth.
Right.
And I would, you know, nerve in my mouth, and I would rather do something else.
Right, right. And I guess that's the opportunity.
Yes.
Right? And I think, you know, this, well, move through it, get over it, you're not over it. You know, our society, we don't deal with grief well, is a bit counterintuitive because I think it's so critical to allow yourself to go down in it, dwell in it, not out of pity, not out of victim,
mm-hmm.
but out of healing. It's the opportunity to be in that space to heal, because then you're moving those emotions through your body and you're developing that new relationship with the acceptance that life, you've talked about this too. You know, we all have a story.
Right.
I mean, that's your podcast.
That's right.
And it's like, how is this story going to define my here and now and my future?
Right, exactly. Or inform it.
Inform it.
Right?
Yes.
So one of the blessings of Jack's death.
Yeah.
And there are blessings. And it's hard to find them, I know.
Yeah.
And it's not, I don't mean to say that it's a blessing that he's gone, but
no.
What I mean to say is that that happened,
mm-hmm.
and we were looking for some light. And I found it almost immediately. We were sitting in our living room with his mom, my wife, his two brothers, and a couple of other people, close family friends. And suddenly I noticed everybody was laughing. And they were talking about Jack. And they were reliving things that he had done that were funny. They were reliving experiences that they'd had with him that were really endearing. He was he loved people. He loved to help people. So in his death, I describe it as almost like a supernova explosion. His spirit was revealed again.
Yes.
Because this illness.
Yes.
Causes is a thief.
Yes, it
this
is.
This illness robs people of their outward display of their spirit, of their personalities, of their integrity. It robs them of so much, and as a family, you become angry.
Yes.
You know, why can't you get sober? You know, and that mantra, that yearning for them to get better, can really morph into anger at them, and you start to lose sight of who they really are.
Of their true spirit, their essence.
Exactly.
Yes,
their essence, exactly.
Yes.
And that's a unique quality about mental illness and substance use disorder that other illnesses usually don't have.
Right.
So it was like a grand unveiling. It was almost like a rebirth.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, it does. And, you know, I think that one of the things you said earlier that I want to go back to is that, you know, the wake, the funeral, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like the lights go out.
Yeah.
And I think, here's my observation for listeners, because I think for those who experience what you've experienced, it's really critical that people don't leave you.
Yeah.
And by that I mean it's okay to bring him up.
Yes.
And bring him in.
Yep.
And name it. But this is what our society doesn't know how to do.
Yeah.
And so they avoid it because, Jim, you may look like, oh, you're over there and you're smiling.
Right.
And they don't want to bring you down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the invitation for all of humanity is that, is there ever a time if someone would come to you and say, hey, Jack, you know, tell your story about Jack, or how are you? Just, I want to bring him in right now. Would that offend you?
No. I literally stopped in my tracks.
You did.
Because I'm yearning for that.
You're yearning for that.
Yeah,
I know.
And that, Kip, is really spoken by someone who knows this walk.
Yes.
And you just spoke the truth. That is absolutely right. Please bring up Jack.
Yes.
Please. If I cry, as my friend Katie says, just know those tears are love.
Right.
Love for my son, and I'm happy to cry them.
You want to.
There's nothing you could say that would offend me.
Right.
Yeah, I want to. I do want to talk about him. I do want to cry about him.
Right. And it never is, you know, it's never, it's not about time. I mean, it could be 8 years. Now,
very easily.
You know, you are just in the beginning here.
Yep. Right.
Of this journey a couple months in. So let me tell you, you know, year 1, 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
that separation, society doesn't know how to handle.
You know, Kip, so the good news for me, and I say I'm yearning for it, I am yearning for it.
Yes.
But I will say I've been met by a lot of people in that space. I'm speaking to one right now.
Yeah.
Who continues to meet me and say, how are you? You know, let's talk.
Uh-huh.
Here we are today.
Yes.
But I do have, from the most unlikely places, people checking in on me. But it is, that said, there are many times when I'm out and about And you just don't feel part of the world. That's the thing that I don't feel right now is part of the world. I feel separate from.
Right.
And so I could be out ordering a coffee at Starbucks.
Exactly.
And I'm looking at people ordering coffees, and for some reason, it just doesn't. How could you be ordering a coffee when the biggest thing is in the world is gone? Which, of course, is ridiculous, but that's the emotion that comes up.
Right, because life goes on for everyone else.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Everyone else. And you are in a time lap. You're just in a stop the world moment.
Right.
For you.
I am.
In your experience.
I am.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And, you know, we've made a lot of progress on destigmatizing this illness.
Ugh.
But we're not there.
No way.
You know, and that's nobody's fault. I'm not angry with anybody that doesn't understand yet or hasn't walked the walk yet. They just haven't had the experience yet. They haven't had a teacher yet.
Right.
But I will tell you, it is really difficult.
Well, so
to think about my son, the wonderful person he was.
Right.
The way that he died was not befitting of the dignity that he brought to this world.
Right.
And most people can't see through the way that he died to his dignity.
That's what you feel.
That's my feeling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's your perception.
That's my perception.
Well, and you're in this world, right, with Safe Coalition, so you're not wrong. And that's so sad. So how do we change that? How do we destigmatize?
Well, I'll tell you, I did against my judgment at the time, I agreed to speak at the overdose awareness vigil on Franklin Town Common on August 30th.
Oh my gosh.
And it was a challenge.
Whoa.
But what I was able to do was speak Jack's name out loud.
Good.
In Franklin.
Good.
Talk about his life, his dreams, the time that I found him sitting on a corner handing a homeless man a sandwich and a cigarette and sitting with him and talking with him for half an hour, which was Jack's MO. He always looked for people that he could help.
Right.
He had so many great qualities, and I was able to talk about them on Overdose Awareness Day. And I also was able to read my eulogy, which was a thank you letter to him.
I thought that was beautiful.
It occurred to me that I had never thanked him.
Oh, acknowledged him. Yeah.
I had never thanked him, and I had never told him. Yes. I told him I loved him all the time. But I had never really inventoried his gifts and said, you know something, buddy? Your illness doesn't define you. This is what defines you. And so I was able to do that, and it felt really good. And I think part of the path to destigmatizing, not part of it, I think the path, is for people like me to walk up to events like that and just show up.
Right.
And not show up with my fist in the air.
Right.
And angry and saying, we have to fight, we have to sue, we have to find the guys that did this. That's not what this is about.
It's not.
And I'm not angry that people, that there's stigma out there. I am willing to have the conversation and do it through the example of my son.
Right.
Show people.
Right.
That this was a life that was important.
Well, and I love what you say. I love what you say about it. Did you know the illness doesn't define his worthiness?
No.
And so it goes back to storytelling and sharing.
Yep.
That will lift and destigmatize, because you know anyone with substance abuse disorder, I mean, it's not their fault. They've come into this vortex that has brought them down, usually connected with I'm not worthy, and they are born worthy. So it's such an oxymoron,
right.
And their behaviors then shift. And and I think you are incredibly courageous, vulnerable, and humble to go out and speak his name when it's still raw within you, which is the modeling, in my opinion, that needs to continue to be done.
Yeah.
You know, and sadly, you know, it's kind of like, well, how do you destigmatize? The onus is on those of us who have lost kids, you know, or because if we go away,
right,
and if we go in our corner and be a victim and dim our light,
right,
no one's going to know.
Right. I mean, you know? there's, you're absolutely right. And I remember then State Rep John Fernandez said at a vigil that I went to in 2015 before I ever imagined I'd be here myself. He said there were two deaths you could experience. The first one, obviously the loss of your loved one, but the second and more tragic death is when we stop speaking about them.
Yes.
And in some cultures, that's what we do. And I would argue you've made a case for that right here. When people walk by somebody or stop talking about or talking to people that are grieving and about their loved ones. So that's something I'm not willing to let happen. And it's a choice, right? It's a conscious choice.
It is.
And I
and
think
your choice is, it goes back to the discomfort, because you, in your discomfort, or actually it's in your comfort of speaking about him, that will create dissonance and discomfort sometimes in others, because
right.
the pain is so great.
Right.
And we have to bear that. You know, we have to be the ones to bear, to be responsible and choose, because we know the truth that it will set us free. And the world, I mean, you know, people just, and by the way, there's no judgment. You know, I think you talked about that early on, is, you know, don't go blaming and shaming and anger. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work, Kat.
But even to those that are afraid of the conversation, mm-hmm. you know, we have to have a lot of forgiveness.
Right.
Self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others that just don't know how.
Right. And to put some meat on that bone in terms of, you know, so someone might be listening and saying, well, what anger would you have? I mean, what are you referring to? So a couple of things. There is the fact that the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma promulgated upon our country, upon our nation, an opioid epidemic, the likes of which we never even imagined seeing. And most people don't connect 100,000 fatalities this year back to the Sackler story, but it's directly connected, because
sure
OxyContin
is.
Came about, oxycodone and the rest of them,
right.
were marketed to a population of doctors that took the bait. And opioids, synthetic opioids, became the drug of choice 15 years ago. And no one can afford them anymore, so that pushes people to fentanyl and other lethal drugs. So one form of anger is, you know, at the pharmaceutical industry.
Yes.
Okay, well,
yes.
Is that what took my son? No. Is it a societal causal factor for the epidemic? Of course. But addiction was around before Purdue Pharma,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately will be around long after this podcast is, you know, airs. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
So that's one area. And another, there are a couple of things that I'm working on legislatively, that I have planned to work on legislatively, that I'd like to see changed as a result of my experience with my son.
Good.
And a couple of them, both of these things, directly played a factor
mm-hmm.
in his passing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if I want to see the change, number one, if I want to celebrate my son's spirit.
Yes.
If I want to have a relationship with myself.
Yes.
If I want to be spiritually moving forward with this as opposed to stuck or moving backward, what does anger and resentment do for me? It doesn't feed me.
No. And it, and resentment lives cellularly in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And will kill you. It really will.
It's true.
It literally will kill you. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people that hold resentment, and you see it in their face,
mm-hmm.
you see it in their words, you feel it in their energy, and I feel so badly, because forgiveness is that doorway to freedom. It really is.
To our freedom.
Our freedom,
right?
Yes, yes.
Isn't it one? And that,
oh.
that's such a core principle, right?
I know.
It's something I did not understand until maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, I did not live that way, and I suffered as a result. But you've also met people, I'm sure, in your travels that wouldn't know what to do if they weren't angry. It becomes their It's their definer.
Well, it's their winning formula.
Right.
Right?
So they become, they identify as angry based on whatever thing it is they're angry.
They're fighting
for. I don't want to be there.
No. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. So what are the things you are looking to shift legislatively?
Well, there are two major things. First of all, we've got a sober home industry in the Commonwealth, which is unregulated.
Uh-huh.
So what is a sober home? A sober home is where someone goes after a period of, usually after a period of rehabilitation treatment, maybe 30 or 60 days, and then they enter a sober home, which hopefully has some rules relative to your sobriety, has mm-hmm. some drug testing. You can work when you're in a sober home, but the idea is you're in a sober community trying to get well, and you might be there for anywhere from months to years. This is a lifelong illness, and it takes a long time to undo the habits and the neural pathways we've created with addiction. So sober homes are a very necessary component. But as an unregulated home, what we're basically doing is we've agreed in the Commonwealth that addiction, substance use disorder, is an illness.
Yes.
So once we do that, how is it that we put patients into a home that's completely unregulated? Jim and Kip could go buy a three-family house right now yeah. and call it a sober home with no regulations. So I would like to see sober homes regulated. And so what kind of regulations? Well, all sorts of safety regulations, things you would imagine, mm-hmm. you know, having to do with physical safety, but also programmatic
right.
Regulations, you know, that you must engage in some sort of recovery activities while you're at the sober home. And then also some, and this is where the rubber met the road for Jack, some training to sober home proprietors so that they understand principles, and one core principle is harm reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So in my son's case, he was dismissed from his sober home for smoking marijuana, and he should have been dismissed. There was a contract that he signed, that
yes.
he, you know, that he wouldn't do that. But he was at very high risk for overdose.
Yeah.
And there are absolute metrics you can follow that would tell you when somebody's at a high risk.
Right.
And an educated sober homeowner who had some options.
Yes.
May have had a pathway to say, hey, you don't fit here, but don't go anywhere. We're going to fit you here.
Right. Instead of pushing you back out on the street.
He was on the street with two hefty bags, trash bags of clothing, and homeless with no money.
Oh, shit.
And I'm not blaming the sober home, and certainly not the operator.
Right.
They're doing, they're operating a system of care that's broken.
Yes, yes, yes.
But we need to clean that up. The other area, Kip, and this one is startling and hard to understand how it still exists, is that in the Commonwealth, if you want to enter treatment for substance use disorder, you have to go through detox.
Oh, geez.
And in order to go through medical detoxification, you have to have something in your system because the insurance company wants to know that this entry into the system of care is medically necessary.
Yeah, valid.
Valid. What that means is that there's three drugs that you can detox from medically: opiates, alcohol, and benzodiazepine.
Mm.
Other drugs you don't need to medically detox from because their withdrawal, it wouldn't put your life in jeopardy or put you in such pain that you wished your life was in jeopardy. So those three drugs. Well, when you're an addict and you go to relapse, you reach for your drug of choice.
Yeah.
In my son's case, that was heroin.
Yeah.
Okay. And I spoke to him on July 15th, the day he got dismissed and the day that he was to die, three times. And he said, Dad, I'm homeless. I'm broken. I'm on the streets. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, well, Jack, we've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
I think you do know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, you know what, Dad, you're right. I'm going to go back in for treatment. And he went out and he used fentanyl and he died because he hadn't had it in his system for for such a long time. It was
but
a lethal
that,
dose.
The brain doesn't tell him that.
No. So what I want to do is see legislators and the insurance companies and the treatment providers come together and say, listen, folks, we don't require somebody that wants to enter McLean Hospital to attempt suicide.
Right, and before they fail, get admitted.
If they fail at their attempt, then we pick them up and say, we'll take you in for treatment. Why can't we create other access to care that makes more sense? This is archaic. So it's those two initiatives that are most pressing to me right now. And to reiterate, it's not anger that I have.
No.
It's just a system that's so broken. I'd like Jack's legacy to be involved with fixing it.
Right. And you're just channeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, anger, there's nothing wrong with anger. But I think if we stay in anger without some movement towards the gratitude side of the scale, we're not doing the right thing. And so I really acknowledge you for that.
I mean, Kip, my gratitude, and I think we said this earlier, but I've got a mixture of gratitude and grief.
Yes.
And it's about equally split.
Yes.
And you mentioned choices. Can I circle back to that?
Yes.
So this was so powerful. And you're the center of this. So to give listeners some context,
mm-hmm.
I started college in 78, and I wanted to be a psychologist.
Yes.
And so I was just drawn to the thought that maybe, you know, that might be something I wanted to do. Became a psychology major. I met Budweiser and girls and decided I could wait on any future schooling, and of course it never happened. So I defaulted to sales, did sales for a while. As I'm cruising along, I had a diagnosis. Actually, it was before the diagnosis, but regardless, there's some through ups and downs of life. I happened to meet someone who became a very good friend, a priest, an Episcopal priest. Really loved his ministry,
mm-hmm.
really got to know him well, got to know something about the church and the priesthood. And I thought, you know what, maybe I'm called to be a priest. So I went through the discernment process. By the way, this is how you know I married well, because my wife stayed at home. She didn't run away.
That's amazing. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it was really an amazing moment. I can't imagine what she was thinking when I said, hey, honey, I'm going to be a priest. Fast forward, I found out I wasn't called to the priesthood, but I was called to the elements of pastoral counseling I mm-hmm. saw my friend doing and I thought were really, and had been so instructive in my life. Cruising along, minding my own business, and I had an opportunity to go to school because a therapist that I'd been seeing, who has a wonderful modality, suggested I might be good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I shelved it.
Mm.
I listened to my fear. I listened to the little bird that jumped on my shoulder and said, hey, Jim, you're too old.
Uh-oh.
You're never going to make it.
No.
What are you going to do with this thing anyway? What's the outcome going to be? Don't dive in. So I put it on the shelf.
Oh.
So somewhere along the line, I get to meet a woman, Kip Hollister, who takes me on a walk and somehow picks up, and I don't ever recall even mentioning this to you, because you're actually present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are actually in the moment when you heard it.
Yes, yes.
And you heard me reference school, and you must have heard me dismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
And you called me on it.
I did.
I literally get an email from Kip. And keep in mind, I've only known Kip for 9 months.
Yeah.
And she says, basically, uh-uh. I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And in 28 minutes, literally,
right,
you had, thank you.
Yes.
Reminded me to listen to my inner self.
Yes.
Not to the victimizer, not to the bird on my shoulder that's saying, hey, you'll never make it. And importantly, what I reminded myself because of our conversation is to stop focusing on outcomes.
Exactly.
Stay in the moment.
And in the energy of your desires.
Right.
Yeah, because when when you're up for expansion, even at your age, which is bullshit. I just turned 60 yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Oh, gosh. So I really mean that.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. But when you're open for expansion with desire, the fears are going to come screaming. And the imposter is screaming. And that's what you get to override. And that's what I intuited with you.
And that's the choice. But you know what?
Yes.
And this is why this life is a miracle.
Yes.
This is why I'm filled with so much gratitude.
Right.
Because as I get older, I'm learning to drop this, oh, it's a coincidence, starting to blow things off. You know, when you emailed me, we got right together.
Oh, yeah.
I felt it was, there was a sense of urgency because I knew who you are. I know how mindful you are. I know how intuitive you are and empathetic you are. So there's something here.
Yeah, there's no, I don't have any horse in the race, right?
No,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I learned to listen to it. So miracles of all miracles kept.
Yeah.
I'm on a plane headed down for this trip when I didn't know Jack. Obviously, Jack died at the end of the week. But at the beginning of the week, I download random podcasts. First podcast I pull up, it's a TED Talk on regret.
Oh.
I said, okay. I heard you, God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on.
I down as soon because I even after we spoke,
yeah, yeah.
The little victimizer came back and said, "Hey, you're still no good.
You're still nice.
Good. Yeah, she's a very nice person, trying to puff you up a little bit, but you're worthless. You can't do this. Go retire. Go to Florida.
Right.
Enjoy your life." And so, anyway, long story short, I get down to Florida, and from the beach on July 15th, the day Jack died. On the beach, I downloaded everything, printed it in the condo, ran upstairs, emailed everything into the school, had an interview, was admitted. Jack died that night.
That's crazy.
On the plane back.
Whoa.
My son looked at me and said, "Dad, you still going to school?"
Oh. Oh.
I had to make a choice.
Right? Oh.
Am I going to fall into some prefabricated formula that says, no, of course not. With everything that's happened, I've got to put everything on hold.
Exactly.
Because school is about to start. Mm-hmm. And, I'm three classes in. And I love it.
Gosh, I'm so happy.
And I have you, my friend, to thank.
Oh.
Because I never, ever would have re-upped.
Yeah, well, you also...
My energy.
Well, but you also have yourself to thank because... This thing of self, of listening,
yep.
Right? And this is mindfulness. And you know, through grief, I think we listen more attentively because we know life is precious.
I think so. But I wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you're right. And actually, say I wasn't there. That's not really accurate. Thank you for reminding me. Grief was very much present for the past 15 years with Jack because you grieve every loss.
Well, you were coming out. I don't mean his lot, but you had a paradigm that wasn't about you.
Right, right.
It wasn't about you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's weird that then you chose that. And it's just, you know what that is, too. It's his support. It's his saying, "Go, Dad. You're awesome. I love it." Like, it is.
I feel that.
It is. It's
really
like
do.
He's in the course with you.
Yeah, and if I didn't mention this, the course is on a body-centered, it's a body-centered psychotherapy course, an energy healing that I'll be taking for the next 4 years, and then we'll see where it goes. But it's, what a gift.
Wow.
Right? Isn't that
yeah,
a great story? I mean, I will never forget, not that I'd forget you anyway,
yeah.
But I will never forget that and how powerful of a lesson that was to me.
Right. Well, you know, that was, I think that ended our last podcast about being a lifelong learner.
Yes.
So that actually fed, I mean, even when you listened to our first talk and now, it actually, I mean, we don't plan this stuff, so the spirit does, but it's really interesting because lifelong learning, you know, is another principle that you're never too old. And I think self-care today is more critical than ever.
Yeah.
Grief, no grief, because we all are grieving in some way, shape, or form, and choosing, right?
Right.
Conscious choice.
Right. It wasn't a hard choice, and you know, mindfulness kept, and the sense of getting out of doing and not and learning to be.
Yes.
And we talked about that in episode
one. We did.
And you know, I am surrounded by people that understand that. And if you hadn't been that person that was present with me, truly present in our conversations, I may not be in school today.
Right, right.
It's...
And you'd be selling out on yourself because of the voices in your head that are not... I mean, they're real to you, but they're not real.
No, you're right.
They're not real. They're made up. you know, but
what I'm learning to do is thank them for being there.
Yes.
Thank you for trying to offer protection to me.
Yes.
You're mistaken.
Yes.
Rather than fighting them.
Well, I think it's surrendering and being with them. And I always say dancing with them, like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm on to you, little Kippy, little shy Kippy over here, you know, because they are a part of your being. Yet the voices can stop you dead in your tracks if you are not mindful.
You're so right.
And then what you do is you go to do
exactly.
to exhaustion.
Exactly.
And then it's a loop.
Exactly.
Right? So we see this, but oh my gosh, in the business community it must be broken. People are not living up to their fullest potential. Because they're so afraid. Fear is running our world. Fear.
And that is the truth.
It is.
Fear is when I learned over the past several years in dealing with codependency and dealing with my son to unbundle my motives. When something comes up that I've either acted on and I want to revisit it and see where maybe I went wrong or what was going on. Or when I'm hopefully prospectively thinking about acting on something or saying something, or I want to unbundle and see where is the impetus for action coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Is it coming from a place of wholeness, mm-hmm. of good, of what is my intention here?
Perfect. You know?
And so, what I've learned the hard way,
yeah.
an embarrassing way,
yes.
because I've had to really make some amends to some people that I hurt when I fail to recognize that fear, mm-hmm. in this case fear, was really at the root of me screaming at my wife about the fact that the dog food had run out.
You got it.
You know, what was really going on there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it may sound like an odd combo, but I unbundled... To get personal, I almost said not to get personal.
Yeah, don't worry.
To get personal, my wife and I went through a patch, like I'm sure most couples do.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the day I thought I knew what the issue was. And I was 100%. If anybody held a gun to my head, I said, I know what's wrong, and it's her. You know?
Yes.
One finger pointing out, guess what? There's three pointing right back at you.
Exactly. And so, always.
Right?
Always.
And so I sat with that for a while.
Good.
And realized, you know what it was? It had nothing to do with what we were yelling about.
Never does, actually.
I didn't want to. I was afraid of being alone.
Yes.
I was afraid of some loss, which, by the way, we hadn't even talked about.
Yeah.
We were happily married, having a patch, that's
right,
all.
Right, right.
But my fear took over.
Right.
My bonding to some trauma of loss in my past.
Yes.
Was driving the bus.
Yes.
And I made it, that fear caused me to scream and yell about something that had nothing to do with the core issue. You get that?
I do, and that beautiful awareness is what humanity is all about, because when we become more conscious, we awaken to some ability to self-regulate, right? So you unpacked, you know, motives, what's my motive, and I also think the ego is so driven by fear.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so choices we make, why am I saying yes to this? Is it to prove myself? Is it to keep up with the Joneses, or is it higher purpose? And when you're when you're tapped in to the soul, which is what this walk is all about, all of that goes away, and discernment and clarity is like right there.
Exactly.
Right? But we got to quiet the mind and be present and conscious to the unconscious patterns that have run our lives ineffectively.
Bang. That's right? It right there. And I think another, you just being mindful also means not ignoring the difficult voices, making space for them.
Oh, yeah.
Acknowledging them because...
Yeah.
You know, what ignoring fear did to me for years, maybe a heavier drinker, a heavier eater, a heavier golfer, whatever I could do to get out of my head.
Yeah.
Is what I pursued. A workaholic.
Yes.
It did a lot of holics to me.
And were you happy?
No.
You were chasing happiness.
Yeah, chasing
outside happiness. Outside of self.
That's it.
Outside, instead of, it's an inner job.
I have.
Do you believe it?
It's an inside job. Love is an inside job.
Love, acceptance, forgiveness, acknowledgement. I mean, yeah.
I have a trunk full of self-help books and tapes, which were focused on be happy now. I think one of them says, be happy now.
Yeah.
God, how can you not buy this? Why? How could this still be on the shelf? How lucky did I get? I can be happy right now. I probably read half of it in the car because I had such a yearning for happiness.
Uh-huh.
Well, ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, almost laughable. It is laughable because, like you said, the gateway to joy, happiness, joy, mm-hmm. which is harder fought, right? Harder
totally.
Earned.
Totally.
Is right through pain.
Right. I know.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And pain has been more instructive in my life than any happiness I've ever had.
Yes, and that's kind of profound.
It pushes us in ways that, what's the expression? It's always darkest before the dawn. I do believe mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm. you know, that to celebrate. And I really mean this. I have mm-hmm. been grieving heavily.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many more than one moment where I sat back and thought, I wonder what new amazing thing is about to happen.
Yeah, right? Right.
Not to me, but with me.
No, with you.
Yeah,
with you. Right. Well, because there's that realization, life is, you can choose life is happening to me, which is victim, or life is happening through me, for me.
Right.
Right? And I think you're on that other side, which is the choice to live more energetically aligned.
Yes.
More energy, which is so cool that you're in an energy course.
Yeah, it's a little intimidating.
Oh, lean in.
Lean in
no
is
way.
Right. The
Love
more
it.
Uncomfortable I feel, the more I think something good's about to happen.
Okay, but that's one of your principles.
It is, but it's hard to hang on to sometimes.
I know. It's easy to say it, but it's
you know,
modeling
we
it.
We talked about, and I love what you said in our first episode about giving me permission to have a 36-year-old mentor.
Yes, Jen.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Which I do.
I know.
But it's not limited. I think what you're doing is you're opening up the gateway to possibilities.
Right.
Dropping the...
Old beliefs,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, old beliefs, old paradigms. They're all up to be dismantled. I mean, maybe
thank
there are
God.
A couple that are good. Oh, gosh, yeah. They're horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, yeah. And... Yeah, so we got to get rid of them. But you can't do that if you don't go in.
It's, you know, what I love, and it's so powerful what you are doing with the Hollister Institute.
It's now the Cultures Division
I'm
of the
sorry.
Hollister Group. No, that's okay.
Because
No, but you know why I did that? I had to integrate. It was like over here as a pet instead of an integrative purpose.
I saw the change in the website.
Yes,
I just
but now you know why.
Now I know why. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, and you know, it's like be bold or go
home. Don't just pat me on the head over here
yes.
and say, go in your, back in your corner.
Exactly.
We don't need this mindfulness stuff. We're busy.
Exactly. And yes.
But it's so powerful because, my gosh, you know, people work, 80% of their lives are spent. People are working more and more demanded from people. The anxiety levels are increasing.
They're so high. Stress is so high. Mental illness, as we've already named, has gone up.
Right.
And there's an answer.
Right. There is an answer, and I've seen it in our own business mm-hmm. model. You know, we are a nonprofit, mm-hmm. And we will make no apologies for treating employees. Paying them well, mm-hmm. treating them with benefits, all the benefits that they might expect in the private sector. We are not going to be holding their heads down saying, you work for a nonprofit, just be lucky. You're just lucky you have a job.
Yes.
You're
yes.
mission-oriented. We expect you to do more for less. That type of mentality.
Yes.
Or is we call it a theology of scarcity.
Yes.
We're not working that
good.
Way. Good. We're coming with a theology of abundance.
Good.
And
good.
I don't mean just abundance of cash.
No.
That's not my talking.
It's a mental mindset.
Exactly.
Yes. I love it. That's where I'm coming from, too.
It is where
yes.
you're coming from.
Yes.
That's why I immediately connected with you. I listened to your podcast before I met you, But the principles, and it's good for me,
yes.
It's good for you, the employees, and it's great for our consumers, the people that consume our services.
Right.
Why do we want to beat people up and expect them to put a smile on and serve us well?
Right, and be inauthentic. Right?
Yeah. So, that's a great life.
Geez. Well, so, you know, we are dedicating this podcast series to your son, Jack. And
thank
so,
you.
In closing, is there anything, you know, you want to share, any point, any new aha, anything?
Yeah.
To ground it.
Well, yeah, I love my son.
Yeah.
Love him more than more than I can possibly capture in words. And I'm really proud of him.
It's beautiful.
And I think that would be my parting comment,
mm-hmm.
is that if anybody's listening that has family members that are affected,
mm-hmm.
know that as angry as you may be, as frustrated as you may be, as hidden, remember that their spirit, their essence of their soul is really hidden by an illness.
So true. It's covered up.
What I did since his death, Kip, was I went and inventoried his text messages, his cards, his voicemails.
Mm.
And what I found was an incredibly emotionally deep young man who was full of love, full of appreciation for life, loved me dearly, taught me how to meditate.
I know.
You know, brought so many gifts to this world. So my message would be, look to uncover, if you are suffering, look to uncover the essence of who that person is while they're here.
I love that.
Do it now and love them the way they are today.
Right.
You don't love their illness, but just love them.
Well, and also hold them as a worthy human and talk to their higher self.
Exactly.
Not to the illness or the behaviors that are taking you off course. That's a very challenging charge.
It's extremely challenging, Kip, and don't beat yourself
right
up if you're not perfect.
Exactly.
It's a good charge, but you just absolutely put into words beautifully. Celebrate them today. I had somebody in a support group along the way share with me a story where they told me that their son, who was very sick at the time and hospitalized, that they realized that they had never told or felt their love for them in the present, that it was always outcome driven. I'll love you when you're sober, or I loved you when you were sober, or I'll love you if you stop doing this. And she encouraged me to be present in the moment and love him just the way he was. And I had that experience, and it was good for him and it was good for me.
Wow.
So
that's power.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, my friend.
Yeah.
This is delightful.
Yes.
We invite you to click subscribe and listen to our other walks. You can also visit HollisterGroup.com, where there is free culture resources, including guided meditations, a blog of insights, and professional training and enrichment programs. The music and song you heard during this podcast, Inner Sovereignty, was performed by Chad Hollister and written by Kip Hollister and Chad Hollister. Thank you for taking a walk.
Inside is the doorway out. Inside is the doorway to my inner sovereignty, where I'm free to be the energy of me, my inner sovereignty. Inner sovereignty, where I'm free to be the energy of me, my inner sovereignty, my inner sovereignty.